ear, bass on your ear. Take your iPod, your iPad with your HD display. Connect them to the cloud so your data's up to date. With your tablet in the air, play some solid game. Log into Facebook, tag a photo you can share. Tweet your plans, and play some Angry Birds now. Come on, baby, tell me who's the nerd. Nerd up. Everybody say, grab your GPS and get up on your Segway. Nerd up. It's a way of the world. No matter where you are, you got a 4G signal.
It's time for the Nerd Up Podcast, and here's your pod hosts, Guilty Wilson. Nerd Up.
All right, welcome once again to another Nerd Up Podcast. Actually, this is we'll have this maybe a starting segment or ending segment. I'm not sure, because I recorded a segment with Isaac and Sean Mitchell and I, the guy that started out this whole podcast venture. And Sean is moving back into town, so we had a little talk with him. And we'll be bringing him onto the podcast. I'm thinking after this segment, I think we'll put him secondary. So we're going to be podcasting with you. So basically, I'm Guilty Wilson, and with me, I've got alphabetically by last name.
Eric Billingsley.
Robert Radford.
I knew it.
Isaac Wilson. And I brought with me a special guest, a certain person by the name of Michael.
Michael Darty. How are you guys doing?
Hey, pretty good, Michael. Welcome to the podcast. So Isaac, tell us why you brought Michael onto this.
He's the main admin for a page that I probably had liked for the longest out of all the pages I have liked. And it's got a considerable amount of likes.
Actually, it was a surprising adventure there, Isaac. Remember, you won some comic books from him. When we submitted the address, we found out he was in the same town as us. And it's like,
that's actually really weird.
It was very weird. What odds of that? So, Michael, you have the page. It's a dedication to the anti-hero Venom. And, Michael, tell us about the page, why you started it, and then what else makes you nerdy?
I got this page started. I had a buddy who adminned a Batman page that had about 46,000 likes. And we were talking on Xbox Live, and he kept telling me, dude, you should make a page. And I kept going, nah, I don't want any, you know. But then he finally talked me into it, and I was just like, he's like, do something you like. And I was like, I love Venom. Venom is my favorite comic book character. I like the Eddie Brock. I like the Matt Gargan. I love Flash. I love the new run on the new Venom that they had. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I have I even have a Venom tattoo on my left shoulder.
Nice.
So what I'm trying to do with that is I'm trying to go sleeves, one arm Marvel, one arm DC of like insignias. I have a Batman symbol on my other arm as well.
Oh, nice. That'd be interesting.
What makes me nerdy? I've loved comic books since I was little. I mean, like when I was little though, I read comic books. I never really understood what was going on. I saw characters that were cool and whatnot. But now I've gotten back into comic books as of late, like in the last year or two. I've started picking up a lot. My favorite, I'd say favorite DC arc, I guess. I don't know if this is me rambling right now, but favorite DC arc would be the Blackest Night.
Yeah, that was that was back before they relaunched the 52. So, yeah, what do you think about the 52?
I'm not a huge fan of it. There's some stories that I like rereading. The only really DC one I'm continuously reading, I guess, is called Justice League 3000.
Yeah.
That just started. It's not bad. It's just weird because it's like, this might be a little spoilerific, but it's like clones of the Justice League. But what they do is they take the DNA of the original Justice League and insert it into another person. So like they erase that person, like mine and everything, and make them like the original Justice Leaguers.
Well, let's start out like we do our normal podcast. We'll start out with television. Actually, by the way, Eric, Tim and I, we ran our lines beforehand, so we already know what we're talking about. So better
keep
up.
Oh, no.
So we
don't know if I'd go that far about knowing what we're talking about.
Yeah, we'll try. We're definitely going to bring Michael in on some comic books issues or talking about comic books. But anytime, Michael, if you got something you want to, you know, just jump in. We hit on a topic that you like to talk about, jump in. But first of all, I want to start talking about Arrow. This is one that not too many people on this podcast, I should say, are keeping up with. But the latest episode, they're actually, put the nod towards several other DC characters. And in this latest episode that I watched, they've got the Suicide Squad, and it features Deadshot, Bronze Tiger, what was the other guy's, Shrapnel, of course Harbinger is running it. I'm trying to think couple other people's. Lila something is also helping to run it. But anyway, they were going to the prison to release all these the members of the Suicide Squad so they can get them on a mission. And Diggle, who's like the assistant to Arrow, who doesn't appear in comics until recently because they loved him on the TV show. They added him into the recent run of Green Arrow. Little side note there. Him and his ex-wife are kind of arguing. And you hear this real cutesy, girly voice, and you see, like, a shadow of her with really messed up hair. And you hear her say, "Hey, cuties, do you need a therapist? I'm really good." And it's like, you know the voice is Harley Quinn. And it's like, that's awesome. That's, like, a real good nod towards. I mean, before they've talked about Bloodhaven and, you know, where Nightwing is. They've talked about Central City. They're going to launch the Flash TV series based on the character Barry Allen that was in Arrow. So it's like it's a great launch for the DC world. In that aspect, that they pay, you know, they actually had the voice of Harley Quinn, and they brought out the Suicide Squad. I'm thinking DC is starting to pick up their game. People always find something to pick on, but I like the aspect, and this is one of the things that we've kind of, you know, beat to death, is that the Marvel Universe has their outline for their movies and their characters coming to the screen, and DC doesn't seem to have that. But I think with this Arrow, they may be trying to work it in somehow, and especially with all the nods, they're starting to bring out more characters. They got Black Canary, they've got Speedy, you know, Roy Harper. So it's like they're starting to bring it all in. So I don't know, maybe we'll see what happens with that. Eric, gotta ask you, did you watch the season finale of Helix?
No, I'm actually about three episodes, maybe four behind on that. I need to. I'm going to do a marathon. And I've been catching up on my shows in binges. So, like, I just got caught up on Bates Motel last night.
Oh, that one's one that I kind of got bored with. But, you know, season finale of Helix, they left us on a big cliffhanger, just like we thought they would. And it actually made it. I want to see the next season. So it really makes it so that the next season, basically, somebody from Ilaria, the opening, they always say what day they're on. And this one was supposed to be day 13 because it's the 13th episode. Well, right. The opening of this one starts out day 235.
And wow.
Yeah. Walker? Anyway, the main doctor from the CDC, he's in there torturing an immortal and asking him where Julia is, which is his ex-wife, who's also an immortal.
Right.
Then they jump to day 13, and it's pretty good. So, and then they end the episode with day 235 as well, trying to find the Ilaria Corp. And I'm not going to spoil it because it's still fresh. And Eric, I'll let you get caught up on it. But the cliffhanger at the end of it, let me just say, it involves a lot of silver eyes, and including some ones we know. So it really, they did a good cliffhanger, and they definitely left it intriguing enough to make you want to come back for another season. And actually, with 235 days, you know, they're only doing one day per episode. That's a lot. That could be a couple of years that we get to get out of this. So 13 episodes a season. You do the math. I'm not gonna. But yeah. They did a good job with the season finale. I was hoping for more, but then again, we knew it was a season finale. Tonight, season finale of Walking Dead.
Oh, yeah.
Terminus. What do you think is going to happen? And a lot of people that are going to hear the podcast are going to hear it and know what happens. Let's get some predictions out. Let's see. What do you think is going to happen, Eric?
Well, I don't have any unique predictions of my own. I just have been reading some other predictions online, and the most common one that I've been seeing is that Terminus is a bunch of cannibals. Now, I don't know how I feel about that. It depends on how it's handled, because cannibals is a little too close to zombies. And it's like, okay, if it's going to be a different threat, it needs to be a different threat, not, you know, more fear of being eaten. But there is obviously something rotten in Denmark, because they're, you know, they get there. There's no one around except for some woman who's preparing a meal.
Yeah, the place Yar.
Was that Denise Crosby?
Yes, it was. Yeah.
Wow, I did not know that.
Yeah,
okay. Well, apparently, then they're all going to be killed by a black blob.
I never thought of that.
Wow. So anyway, I'm not really sure what the threat is going to be, but yeah, Terminus is not what it appears to be. It's it's way too manicured with plants, and it's too idyllic for it to be real. So there's some threat that's awaiting them there. Now, something that I picked up on in the back of my mind, but I wasn't 100% sure about, was the quote unquote bad boys that Daryl has hooked up with.
Yeah.
I was wondering. I was like, are these the same guys that Rick faced off against in the house? And I heard the word claimed, I was like, aha, it is, because I remember the guy when Rick was hiding under the bed, the guy who laid down the bed said it was claimed, and I was like, ah, it's them.
Yeah,
and sure enough, they're hunting Rick down, and of course, you know, Daryl has no idea of that. And I'm sure that it's going to come down to Daryl having to take them out to protect his friends. But it's kind of weird because they're trying to build up this kind of mystery about, oh, is Daryl going to be on the, you know, is he going to go to the dark side? It's like, well, of course not, because his brother was trying to get him to go to the dark side, and he loved his brother, and he still wouldn't cross over then. So he's going to cross over to these guys he doesn't even know? I don't think so.
Right, yeah, especially when they tried to take his bunny. So, you know, nobody takes Daryl's bunnies. But I'll tell you what, here's the deal. Here's what I think. And this is going by just what I know from the comic books. In the comic books, there's actually two, gated communities, if you will, societies that have sprouted up, and they help each other. They build big walls around their town, and there's two of them. And the first one Rick and his group go to, there's some kind of guy, he's kind of like, they call him Jesus, actually, in the comic. And anyway, he says, hey, there's the bigger community that we can get some help from. And what it is, they go to the bigger gated community, and it looks like they're independent. But see, basically all these communities are having to give to a bad guy. And this, now, spoiler, this is the guy that has a baseball bat wrapped in barbed wire and calls it Lucille, I think, it might be Lucy. And this is the guy that kills Glenn in the comic book. Now, again, the TV series, they're kind of different. But these big communities, they have to pay a tithing to this guy or he'll kill people. And it's like, and so where I left off reading the comics, this guy, Rick was going to go after this guy and, you know, his reign of terror. So I'm thinking that Terminus is the big town with all the people, and the people that Daryl are with, that's the guys that's going to turn into the guy that kills people if they don't give him part of their food. So we'll see. We'll see. I mean, I'm just thinking they're going to be, if they go with the comics, go back to parts of the comics, they might go with that aspect of it. I'm with you on the idea of cannibalism. I hate that anytime they put that. I mean, even in Cormac McCarthy's The Road, you know, if you any of you read that book, they had the cannibals.
No, but I saw the movie.
Oh, I never saw the movie. But
movie's good. Depressing.
Yeah. Well, the book was even more depressing. They have a segment on cannibals there in that. And even in that book, I'm like, oh, gosh, why do they got to bring in cannibals? I don't know. There are too many dystopian stories, you know, novels, movies, TV shows, whatever. They rely on that scary cannibalism aspect. And if they do that, I mean, the zombies are enough cannibalism. That's all they need.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with the concept of cannibalism per se. It is overused. I'll agree with you there. But within the context of a zombie story, it's too similar. You know, I mean,
right.
It's just that, you know, they don't belong in the same universe. You either have zombies or you have cannibals, but not both.
Right.
Now, why cannibalism is such a popular literary device and why it is so popular is because if you think about a post-apocalyptic world where, you know, farming and food distribution is all gone and done away with, especially if like the grounds are radiated and there's the logical extreme is that people will start eating each other. Mm-hmm. But it's not just the literal eventuality that I think is attractive, is because it works so well as a metaphor for society eating itself, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's why it will continue to be a popular, cipher, if you will, in popular entertainment, because it does work so well as a metaphor.
That's a good way to put it. But I don't want to see it in Walking Dead. So
no, me either.
Yeah, but yeah, I saw those rumors too, and I'm like, no, it's not going to go there. I don't know. That's my prediction. Is at this place, but then again, we really aren't going to know fully what Terminus is until next season, anyway. I have a feeling.
You may be right, but I was hoping that they would bring it to some sort of head or some sort of big conflict. This episode, but as a friend of mine pointed out, he's like, well, they're going to have to really kick it into high gear if they're going to do that. And I was like, well, yeah, you're kind of right. They've got 1 hour, you know, to bring us to the season finale, and they haven't really set all the pieces up. I mean, yes, if the guys that Daryl's traveling with, if they catch up with Terminus, then you've got a conflict there, and that may be where they're headed.
Yeah.
And then we won't find out really what Terminus is or what its significance is till next season. That's probably where they're headed, because, I mean, they're not going to end the season without some sort of cliffhanger or some sort of tension moment. So it's just a matter of what that moment's going to be.
Yeah. So we'll have to wait and see, but It's highly anticipated. I know every TV in the world will just about be tuned in, including Tim Matson's.
I foresee disappointment in your future.
Oh. I'm telling you, Tim, you need to get this. What about you, Michael? Are you a Walking Dead fan?
Yeah, I am. I'm two seasons behind. I've only seen up to season two.
Oh, well, I'll tell you what. Season two, you can skip the middle part and just watch the first and last episode, and you're good.
Yeah, pretty much.
I hated season two, and so a lot of people. So, well, all right. So there's a couple people we still got to work on. But I know Isaac and I and Eric will be tuned in, ready for the finale. Yeah, the TV show and the comics, you can almost see them as two separate worlds in several aspects. They bring in little tidbits here and there, but they're still two different worlds, especially, I mean, since Daryl is in there, because he's not even in the comics, so they're tying those in, so. Nerd Up
Podcast. I'm Gil T. Wilson.
I'm Isaac Wilson.
And I'm Sean Mitchell.
Yeah, how about that? A voice from the past, huh? Sean Mitchell's joining us again, and we'll talk about why and all that in a minute here, but hey, welcome back, Sean.
Thanks.
For those of you familiar with the Nerd Up Podcast, you'll know that it started out with a little thing called the True Hideaway Podcast. And it was based on the shop that Sean and I ran together, and then he ran, and then he left.
Pretty much, yeah.
And basically, the whole purpose of it was we started out with talking about the goings-on in the Magic the Gathering gaming community and a few other communities within the nerd culture, and we branched out from there. And, well, he's back. And what brought you back to Robinson?
Well, and as you know, like I moved to Florida. For about a year, and I just recently decided to take about a 2-week vacation, and the purpose of that 2-week vacation is just to kind of scout out the area, which I'm already familiar with, but I just want to see if we can jumpstart the gaming shop again, and maybe this 2-week vacation will turn into something a little more permanent.
That'd be cool.
So, I mean, the idea is to see what kind of promise there is and what kind of potential there is to rebrand the shop as something new, and start back in hopefully June.
Now, I know you got a special tournament to kind of gauge all the interest again. Coming up, what, April 5th? Is that right?
Yeah, April 5th, we're actually having a Modern Masters Win-A-Box. Mm-hmm. They're playing in the standard format, though. It's just really, I mean, it's a huge prize payout. We've got a, for first place, is a Modern Masters Win-A-Box, or a booster box. Mm-hmm. And that currently has a retail value of $450.
Wow.
So, you know, that's first place prize, and we're paying out to the top 16 people.
I saw that. 16 winners,
yeah,
basically.
So $25 to register, and we're offering pre-register incentives for things like, you know, the way I'm doing it is every 5 people who pre-register for the event, we're revealing a new prize for the drawing, and only the people who pre-register for the event are going to be eligible to win those prizes. So it's a really good way to kind of guarantee some prizes.
Well, I know one of the prizes, I'm not sure how you're giving that out. I'm thinking that's through this method, is the gaming mat, the play mat.
Well, the gaming mat is actually awarded to the top 4 finishers. That's in addition to it. But, I mean, some samples or some examples of the prizes that we have are things like deck boxes, more play mats that aren't the top 4, but other play mats and sleeves, things like that. And then the rest of the top 16 are still going to be eligible to win actual booster packs as well. So,
oh, wow.
And if they don't want packs, then they can just opt to take the cash instead and walk away.
That's a good way to do it too. The top prize is the box or $300 cash, I believe is what you had listed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And either way, you're a winner on that. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
But the thing got me about the play mats was not only were they branded with the new name of the place that you're going to have, which we'll talk about in a second, but also Nerd Up Podcast has a little logo on there.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that makes it good. If people playing, they can always remember the podcast. So.
Absolutely.
Now, I mentioned that you've got a name for the place now. What's the name?
The name of the store is actually going to be called Wiz Blizz Academy.
Wiz Blizz Academy.
Yeah. The website is at wizblizzacademy.com. And so if you want any details on the current tournament or any of the upcoming events that we're going to have as we kind of rally towards the opening of the store, you can definitely keep tabs on that. And hopefully we have a long future ahead of us, And I can't, I mean, there's so many things that I hope to do differently than before. I've learned so much about running that type of store over the course of the past year. The biggest focus is going to be more about building a new crowd instead of focusing on the crowd at hand.
Right.
So we, you know, we're going to put a lot of attention on bringing new players into these games and just kind of broadening the audience to make this store, you know, a better place to be for everybody.
So not only, I mean, you will cater to the people that are already playing, but bringing in some new, and that's good for the people that are already playing because that's new competition for them.
Yeah, I mean, one example of what we're doing differently is that before in the Magic tournaments, the Friday Night Magics, is it was, you know, $5 to play, and then your price structure was dictated by how many people entered the tournament, right?
Right.
So moving forward, the way it's going to be is no matter how many people are in it, the price structure, the prize payout is going to be the same amount of people or same amount of packs awarded or store credit awarded no matter what.
Right.
Regardless.
I see.
The other thing is that you have the option to play for free. So you no risk there. You have no risk.
How's that work with play for free?
So if you don't, if you better question, how does it work if you pay?
Okay.
So if you pay, you automatically get one pack just for registering.
Okay.
Secondly, you also get 50% increase on the prize payout. So if you don't have the money or you don't want to risk your investment by paying, by all means, don't pay. Play for free. But when you win first place and second place is getting more packs than you, you're going to wish you had paid. So the idea is that we're giving an opportunity for newer players to try these games out without risking anything.
Right.
And they have the opportunity to make new friends, to learn what this game is without actually losing anything, with still an opportunity to win something.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, a lot of the people that I've consulted with have kind of asked the question, well, how do you plan on making money if you're letting all these people play for free? And it really comes back to the fact that it's a long-term campaign because we're bringing more people in.
Mm-hmm.
And by having that ability where we're not scaring the newer players off, we're, in the long term, going to bring a bigger audience, higher volume of players, and then it's the same prize payout regardless. So whether I have 8 people or 16 people, it's going to end up being the same amount of packs given away each week.
Right.
So players know what they have the potential to win when they play in it, regardless.
And plus, you know, as a shop, looking at the business side of things, new players coming in, they're going to need to buy new packs.
Exactly.
So
as we get these new players and their interest is invested into it, we hope that by doing that, they'll just naturally spend their disposable income on, you know, just the extra product as it's, you know, becomes fit.
Now, also, I know Magic is a big thing, big Friday night Magic. You're going to be catering to other players too, right?
Yeah, I think one of our biggest opportunities that we kind of missed out on before was what other games could we push for the community? And as you guys proved during the previous Nerd Day, Yu-Gi-Oh! Is a is a very prominent game in this community, maybe not quite as competitive, but really I think that's just because it hasn't been given the opportunity to, you know, display what it has to offer.
Well, as you know, whenever a couple of years ago we took a vacation, I went up to North Dakota, and there was a shop similar to what we were trying to run. They had Yu-Gi-Oh! Tournaments on a regular basis, so it's still pretty popular there.
Oh, yeah.
Then, so it,
and I'm in Florida right now, and there's 4 shops all within about a 4-mile radius, and Yu-Gi-Oh! Is huge. I mean, granted, you know, Tampa, Florida is substantially bigger,
right,
but we're talking about a 4-mile radius of all these stores, 4 to 10 miles radius of all these stores, and, you know, the Yu-Gi-Oh! Tournaments are still bringing in about 40 people a week.
Wow.
You know, just to play.
Yeah.
So it's a very popular game still. It's just a very different game, and I think there's too much comparison of it to Magic that it's easy to be very narrow-minded about what kind of potential it has to offer as far as a business is concerned.
Right.
Especially when you're someone like me who has just kind of grown with Magic his entire life.
Right.
And not really given the opportunity to other games such as such as Yu-Gi-Oh! And Pokemon, mm-hmm. And things like that.
Well, I'll tell you, the Yu-Gi-Oh! The tournament at the Nerd Day totally took over a lot of people by surprise. We had it on the poster advertising, you know, mm-hmm. Yu-Gi-Oh! Will be played, and all of a sudden these like 10 kids show up, we're playing Yu-Gi-Oh! Well, let's put together a tournament. And yeah. They got involved, and a whole bunch of other people got involved, so it really... but yeah, it just totally took people by surprise because I guess most of them play at home. You know, yep. They don't have a place to go.
Yeah.
Now they're going to actually have one. I know this is probably something still in the working, still in the scheming, but you and I were talking before recording that you had mentioned something about chess.
Oh, yeah. you know, something that I had casually ventured into, I think one of the shops back in Florida was there was two chess boards sitting right beside each other. And there were two players on, obviously, on each side playing chess, and they had timers. And it was so different because they were playing so quickly, but they were helping each other, and I didn't get it until I actually watched closely and saw what was happening. And then I actually got to play with it myself, and it was so much fun, so addictive, so fast-paced. And you could play over and over again, but the way it was working was each people on one side of the table, on each side of the table, were on the teams with each other. Mm-hmm. So if I'm playing against you, Gil, and we have Isaac over here,
hi.
Isaac would be on my team, and then you have your teammate.
Mm-hmm.
Well, whenever I take one of your pieces, I put it over here, and whenever Isaac is ready, he can take that piece and put it on his board.
Oh, nice.
So whenever I take one of your pieces, it can be used on my teammate's board. And vice versa. Whenever he takes a piece, I can use it on my board. Each move, you hit the timer and pass turn, basically. If I put you in checkmate, it doesn't necessarily mean the game is over.
Right.
Because your teammate is still playing. So as long as he doesn't get put in checkmate either, mm-hmm. or as long as your timer doesn't run out, the game is still going. Because there's a very good chance that he can get a piece that gets you out of checkmate.
Yeah. He's like, hey, give me a queen.
Or like something, you know, that blocks the rook.
Yeah, exactly.
And gets you out of that spot. So it's, mm-hmm. you know, it's very interesting to see.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
It is very fun.
It sounds like a lot of fun.
It's it definitely puts an interesting spin. I think, you know, before whenever chess had been brought to my attention for the store and the beta version of our store, mm-hmm. I was so skeptical about it because... most of the people who wanted to play chess were already very competitive.
Right.
So I didn't think it would be that successful. But if I can bring in, you know, a very twisted version of chess...
right.
That is still traditional and still respectable to its, you know, how chess should be played, then I think it has a place in a community like this.
Yeah.
Especially with the competitive environment that we have to offer. It's just going to be a matter of, can we provide that kind of volume?
Right.
To have that many players.
It's an interesting idea, and we got it. There's enough small interest in the area, so yeah, there's a chance. That'd be kind of fun to see that if that evolves and everything.
Absolutely, I think it'll bring in a more mature audience as mm-hmm. far as maybe some older players.
It'd be a lot less quiet, or a lot. Well, no, not with that way it's played. It might be a little bit louder. Right. That'd be a louder version
we'll
of chess.
See.
So you spent about a year and a half or two in Florida. What'd you pick up? What made Florida so?
Well, it was just it was a really big culture shock overall.
Mm-hmm.
Currently, I work for a bank in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a lot different. I mean, you know, coming from a community with 7,000 people where you know everybody,
mm-hmm.
And then you go to a town where you know nobody. Literally, when I moved there, I knew two people. And you just kind of have, you know, I'm 26 years old at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And just started over. And it's a very difficult thing to do. But I did it, and I made a lot of amazing friends there. Started playing Magic again about halfway through, very competitively. Mm-hmm. And I found a really good team of people, and it's been an amazing experience. But the culture has been really the story that makes it so worthwhile as far as a life experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the clubs are different.
Yeah.
The human, you know, overall, I guess human behavior is the same. You know, people still want to borrow money. You know, still people still want to do stupid crap. And,
yeah.
You know, it is what it is. Especially where I was living at, and it's a very college-oriented mm-hmm. Area. I think the biggest difference for me overall was adapting to A, the traffic, and B, the... I guess the ethnic diversity,
mm-hmm.
Coming
oh, yeah.
from a town where we're prominently Caucasian people.
Yeah, you were the brownest person in this town.
So those of you who can't see me through the podcast, I'm Filipino, very dark skin, which I was actually looking at the demographics for Robin Center whenever I was doing my business plan.
Mm-hmm.
Filipinos actually take up 0.01% of the Robinson population.
Right.
You can say you are the 0.1%.
Yeah, exactly. And African Americans take up 0.66%.
Okay.
So obviously there is not a a lot of diversity when it comes to our ethnic backgrounds here in Robinson, Illinois.
Right.
In Tampa, where I work at specifically, I actually saw more African American people than I did you know, Caucasian or anything else for that matter. And that was different for me. Just I feel like I learned a lot about urban culture.
Yeah.
And just to kind of have to adjust to that, so much new slang. And maybe it's just part of me getting old, but
you couldn't keep up with the
kids. I just couldn't keep up. Like, and just as one example, I'd be walking around and my friends would be like, "So are you going out tonight?" And I'd be like, "No, I'm probably going to stay in tonight." And their answer would be, "Oh, true." Like, what is true about that? You know, yeah. I mean,
of course it's true. I said so.
But I mean, I guess that's you kind of the culture from songs, because mm-hmm. what it is words from certain songs actually transition into how we talk.
Oh yeah.
So things like turnt up, whatever, you know, obviously I'm getting too old because these are things that kids are saying every day. And I guess in that area, they typically say that really quick, like it catches on like fire mm-hmm. there. And I was just so behind the scenes. I felt like I was the uncool kid, apparently. I just
you were the one yelling at him to get off your lawn.
Yeah, yeah. So, but I mean, I guess that's the biggest transition from Florida to Robinson. But, you know, there's nothing better than home. Everybody, and I talk about this on one of the Facebook groups about our community. You know, everybody treats your hometown like it's some sort of purgatory that you're just trying so hard to get out of. And what you don't realize is when you finally get out of there at that age, it's a lot harder to start over. Build new relationships at the same level that you've grown up with the people around you. And I firmly believe that everybody should definitely experience life outside of their hometown.
Yeah.
But home is home. Mm-hmm. I mean, and it's always going to be that way. You can't just pick up and leave for no reason and expect things to be easy. So, you know, it's been really a good refresher to be back. And we'll just see where it goes from there.
Well, it took me about 30 years before I came back home, but I eventually did, so.
Yeah.
But we're going to move on as if this is the old times, back in the True Hideaway days. And so let me ask you this before we do continue on here, Sean. When you do open up this shop and everything gets rolling, you going to do more podcasts with us?
Absolutely. I hope I have the opportunity to become a... have a bigger role on the podcast and see where it goes from there.
Well, I think from running the shop, you definitely have the gamer point of view that we're kind of missing out. We got the video game point of view covered.
With Isaac, yeah.
With Isaac and Eric and Tim. But the other games, it's well, like one time I interviewed Modifius Games, one of the publishers of that gaming company. Mutant Chronicles is what they were talking about, the new. And it was like, I was almost at a loss, but I had enough from hanging out with you and from Legends and from all the other Nerd Day stuff that I knew what I was talking about.
Sure.
There's a couple of gaming companies that are going to be sending me demo games to play and to give away on the podcast. I'm not going to reveal the names yet, but they look like a lot of fun, and so now you're going to be helping me out with that.
Yeah, I mean, the opportunity to provide an outlet and a new perspective to help the podcast grow is just really promising, and I can't wait to be part of it.
Yeah. So, all right, well, let's move on like it was the old podcast. We always talk about TV shows right off the bat. You've been away for a while, but I'm sure you've been keeping up on a lot of the same things.
You know, I watch a lot of the shows with the mindset, I think, that I always knew I was going to come back and do a podcast with you. So I was like, I got to keep up with the same shows that Gil's watching. So I'm up to par. So some of them I kind of fell off on. Mm-hmm. I haven't watched an episode of Revolution in ages.
Oh, I haven't either. I gave up with that. So, you remember when I gave that one up. So, well, you do keep up with Arrow, I'm sure, right?
I keep up with Arrow pretty avidly.
Yeah. How do you think the season's turned out?
You know, You had mentioned that you haven't seen last week's episode, so I'm sure you're going to talk about it with Tim, and Eric this weekend. But this, you hadn't seen last week's episode.
Yeah, last week.
So you got to catch up on last week's episode and this week's
episode. And tonight's episode, yeah.
So last week's episode was a really good filler episode. That's all I can really
good
give
filler,
you.
Huh? Well, I'm interested in seeing, because they're bringing the Suicide Squad in that one.
Yeah.
And when DC launched their new 52 comics a couple of years ago, that was one of them I kept thinking, oh, I want to read that. That Suicide Squad looks pretty cool. Because I like the premise of, and I've talked about it before on a previous podcast, that I like the idea that, villains, super villains, really, they're working off their sentences by doing good. And I always liked that concept, and I wanted to see what they did, because I thought it was kind of an interesting idea. I mean, Marvel, they have that with New Warriors and
Thunderbolts.
Yeah, Thunderbolts. Those are the kind of anti-heroes doing heroic work. And so when they brought that on Arrow, I'm like, oh my God, I got to watch that. And I don't know why, but I'm afraid to watch it, actually, because I'm afraid they're going to ruin it.
They and I haven't seen what you're referring to really compare it to, but I did appreciate how they portrayed Deadshot.
Uh-huh.
But I think it was very, the whole premise of it was very awkwardly placed in the storyline overall for Arrow.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like it wasn't really relevant to what was happening with Oliver Queen.
Yeah, I kind of saw that aspect that might happen with that. What do you think of this? Looks like they're using Arrow to spin off several other shows.
It looks like
Suicide Squad,
Flash.
And The Flash.
Yeah,
I mean,
so yeah, the Flash looks, from what I've read of it so far, looks pretty amazing. You know, I had been talking to you and Alan
mm-hmm.
about it. You know, and even Brandon, and you know, I just hope that we can learn what Arrow did right and what Arrow did wrong
mm-hmm.
to make the Flash series even better.
Right.
Because I think that the Flash series has the potential to offer something very original that
right.
hasn't really been seen in any other superhero show, and that's pretty much humor.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the Flash character is a very dynamic, very shrugs everything off type of character, and he brings a lot of I think comedic relief.
Yeah,
as far as DC characters are concerned,
kind of like Spider-Man in the Marvel
kind of,
world.
Yeah,
he does
absolutely.
A lot of witty retort in
yeah,
his battle. So
yeah,
except
I think
that, that's mainly left up to Green Lantern.
Well, and the thing is, the Green Lantern in the comics, he's got that, but there's so many different Green Lanterns
yeah.
now, so it's like that's hard to call that. But the Flash has always been the Spider-Man of the DC world, and I like that aspect. It's going to make it a lighter, because you got to admit, Arrow's pretty dark.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Arrow is extremely dark, but the other thing is, I think that Arrow is way too close to what Batman would be like.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I feel like Flash was definitely the correct character to start off, to go to next, as much as I would have loved to seen like a Robin or a Nightwing series.
That's what I thought was going to be next with Nightwing, with as many references to Bloodhaven.
Right.
I thought, oh gosh, they're going to bring out Nightwing.
But the thing that I like about these series is that they put so much effort into building the character of what Flash is going to be before they even start the series.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's cool as well.
Yeah.
So, at least they chose, like, the right actors to play him.
Yeah, and they have.
Their Arrow actor, I mean, he can pull off the red beard and goatee pretty well.
Yeah.
Just needs to get it more pointed.
And the thing about it is whenever... we talked about this on a previous podcast. Stephen Amell plays, you know, Arrow great, but he can also play off the wimpy little Oliver Queen from before he became Arrow.
Yeah, it's a really it's really interesting to see, especially when they do the flashbacks.
Mm-hmm.
Although,
like I've said before, I'm tired of that island. I'm tired of those flashbacks.
You don't like the flashbacks?
No, they're wearing on me. It's like, oh, come on.
No, one thing that I have, one thing that kind of makes me say a lot of these episodes in the past 2 weeks have been filler related is we've missed Roy Harper for the past 2 weeks now.
Mm-hmm. With the exception of, Slade Wilson came, was threatening the family, and all of a sudden Roy Harper, Black Canary, and of course Arrow, they all kind of like,
right,
what are you going to do now, you know?
Yeah.
You know, that was like the last time we've seen him. So,
but one thing that's kept me really enticed, and I don't know why, but Stephen Amell's Facebook page
mm-hmm.
makes me look forward to watching Arrow more and more. So
he's doing something right, and I don't know how much influence his producers have on the page itself, but it seems, it would appear, based on a lot of the posts that he's done, I think it's pretty much primarily him.
I'd say, I mean,
because you can tell a lot of it's very, very personal.
Yeah, yeah. There's moments where I'm like thinking, oh, he's got to have a publicist do this, but then you'll see the next post or something, and it's like,
well, did you see the like post him. That he had about talking about the airlines experience? But basically, his family had passed, and there's usually,
yes, I remember that now.
His grandparents had passed, and he just kind of ripped the Canadian Airlines,
yep,
a new one, and I was like, well, you know, because this is somebody who has a lot of influence.
Yeah.
And just to see that openness.
They wouldn't give him the morning, forget what they call it, a special ticket for people that have death in the family. Mm-hmm. And they wouldn't give, or actually they wouldn't give his sister, I think is what it was. And he, I remember that, yeah. So that right there was proof that, you know, he pretty much runs his Facebook page. And he throws spoilers every once in a while, too.
And one thing I thought was interesting that you weren't aware of is for all our Tomorrow people, the main character from that series is actually Stephen Amell's cousin. And a lot of the time they talk to each other and bounce feedback and spoilers off each other to see what's going on. So that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, I never put that together.
It's weird to think that the most BA character, Matt Harris characters, have like the nicest real life personality.
Oh yeah,
that contrast.
Yeah, well, he has to be a nice guy as Oliver Queen, so maybe that's
yeah, but I mean,
well, no, I guess other, not he's a total ass, like, as Oliver Queen.
I'm assuming Daryl Norman Reedus is probably, like, he looks like he'd be a nice person, really.
For the fans and everything too. Yeah, well, you got a point there. Well, I think
Justin Bieber.
Well, I think all actors are really like that, if they really, as long as it doesn't go to their head yet. But yeah, Stephen Amell, his Facebook page keeps you posted on things. He's very friendly to his fans, and I understand he never turns down autograph time. So,
yeah.
So at least what I've heard, I've never met the guy, so I don't know for sure.
Maybe if you're lucky, we can get Stephen to make an appearance on one of our podcasts.
Hey, I think that'd be a good idea, Stephen Amell. If you're listening right now, email me, or you can tweet me at Gil Wilson, and we'll talk.
I've seen him do Skype before, so
yeah,
he does his Q&A's.
Yeah, he does, and he's in touch with the fans. You mentioned Tomorrow People. I gave up on that. I tried watching it. I thought the idea was awesome.
Well, you got to keep in mind that it is a reboot of a very old series.
What's that?
Tomorrow People.
I never caught that.
Yeah, why it's so
I never heard
corny.
Of
oh. Because yeah. I want to say it was a reboot of a 1970s show, which I figured you would have known about.
Never heard of it. So,
but
it might have been a British. Well, I don't know. All right, I'm looking it up. We'll
it find is. It's a reboot series. So that's a lot of where the corniness or even the predictability of the show might stem from, is that it's an older show and we've just kind of become more accustomed to what to expect when it comes to TV shows.
Yeah.
And that's one that dates back to, you know, 30 plus years ago. So,
I know that's, I mean, I could take corny, and they had their corny moments. I can take corny, but the predictability got me every single time. I'm like, if I can know how it's going to end, why should I bother watching? I think that's what it was that got me.
Mm-hmm.
So they lost me on it. What, you've been keeping up on it. What's going on in that Tomorrow People world?
Basically, just a lot of different, I don't know how to explain everything going on. That is such a wild and crazy show. But long story short, they're basically trying to find the main character's dad, who's the savior of all of their Tomorrow People, so to speak. So a lot of it's just, there's just a lot of drama between the leaders of the show. Them trying to sort out what is the right thing to do in this situation. And you get torn on who has the most rational ideas of what to do in certain situations. So that's pretty much been what that is.
Hmm. Yeah, actually that show, whenever I stopped watching, maybe they've changed a little bit now, but it was like three factions. You had like the agency, the government type agency, whatever they were. I looked at them as the bad guys. Then you had a bunch of kids that had the powers. And then you also had the one kid that had the powers, but he was working for the bad guy.
Yeah.
And yet he didn't want to hang out with a bunch of thugs. I mean, it was like
kind of it. I mean, they're all kind of, there's just a lot of twists and turns because you don't know who to trust. And that's what it really comes down to. Everybody has a different end game on what they think should be done.
you kind of get the impression that everybody is out for the better good, which is what makes it such an interesting series. There's not necessarily a right and a wrong in game, but there is a right and a wrong as far as how do you get there. You know, that kind of is the controversy, is that if we all want the same goal at the end of it, what is morally the right way to do it?
Mm-hmm.
And you have so much conflict between the different parties who are all arguing on the best way to do it, you know, so that's what makes it really interesting.
I can see that aspect. I don't know if I'll pick it up again, but I can see that point. So, all right, well, one other show that, like I said, like Erica and I have been loving, and I think me more than Eric, but Helix. Have you been keeping up with this episode?
I've been keeping up with Helix, actually. I started that from the beginning, and I've been loyal to it since it started.
I'll tell you what, it kind of started slow, but it was a good slow.
Yeah.
It's like it had good storyline to it.
I felt like it was almost reminiscent of Walking Dead.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of similar basic core survival storyline, or apocalyptic storyline, so to speak, but very condensed into a specific area to prevent that whole apocalypse from actually occurring.
Yeah, good point. Really good point. Yeah, because, again, they're in a base in the Arctic. Mm-hmm. Some sort of disease has broke out, but they've gone and from the beginning, it looked like it was going to be another zombie show.
Yeah.
And especially the previews, they showed all these people running, wanting to eat each other type thing, you know. And then it's turned into something about a disease or some genetic manipulation. And then now you've got immortals.
I think a lot of people could argue that Helix is probably the prequel to The Walking Dead.
I wonder. I mean, you know, it's got its moments when you got to wonder about that. So, I know the whole immortals thing kind of throws it for a loop here lately.
Oh yeah,
but I'm liking that.
A lot of it's a stretch,
right?
Because it starts out at the point. Most of the series has been to the point where none of it's very supernatural. It's all very scientific.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're getting to certain points in the series where this doesn't make any logical sense. You're kind of waiting for the justification that makes this make sense.
Yeah.
And we haven't gotten there yet.
Season finale is this Friday.
Mm-hmm.
So you just got to wonder, how are they going to tie this all up? I know they're going to leave us hanging.
Right.
But they still got to come to some kind of a ending for us to hang on to. How are they going to tie it all up?
Well, I expect a full insight on the next podcast after you watch it Friday.
Mm-hmm. The whole idea of it being enclosed in one little base, and I told earlier, after the first couple of episodes, I told one of the guys on the podcast, I said, that base is deeper than what we thought.
Right.
And sure enough, it turns out to be. So
we need to go deeper.
Yeah, we need to go deeper. So, all right. What other television shows are you keeping up with, Sean?
We have Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's another one that we have in common. I fell off of it for about a week or two, and then I was like, well, I don't have anything to watch right now. Caught back up with it, and now I'm kind of enticed again. But, you know, that's one of those shows where you kind of feel like it's a lot of filler, but in the last 2 weeks, they kind of made some headway on making it more relevant, added some new elements to it that I thought were really interesting, and a lot of interest elements that I was like, why does it even matter? Like where Coulson, have you seen the most recent episode? Coulson, you know, he gets that remedy for her to live, basically, which is the same remedy that he took, basically.
Right.
So, of giving that to his team runs up to the top of the surface and gets it situated. He discovers, he stays down below, discovers, oh my God, this is what I'm doing to her. And he's like, don't do it. But by the time he gets up there, it's too late.
Yeah, and there's a lot of speculation as to what that alien creature is.
And
a lot of people say it could be Kree in the Marvel Universe. And so, but the thing is it going to matter really what it is, or are they going to be bringing that? You know, Joss Whedon's got this huge plan with the Marvel Universe.
Right.
Is it going to be brought up in one of the next movies? But there, see, for a while there, I thought that Coulson was going to be, if you're familiar with Marvel Comics, the Vision. he's a human put into an android's body.
Mm-hmm.
And Hank Pym, Ant-Man, makes him after they defeat Ultron. In fact, they make the Vision so that they can defeat Ultron. So I was thinking, well, that's where they're bringing Coulson back. He's going to be the Vision. Well, now I don't think that's the case anymore since exposing this body that has the fluid draining from it to cure people.
Right.
So it's like, okay, that might not be where they're going. So
I did think that the most recent episode, aside from the development on the controversy between whether it was the right decision to give her that remedy or not,
uh-huh.
That episode was very irrelevant to the rest of the series. The whole lady from Coming from
Sith.
The Lord. Yeah.
I think that was that actually served two purposes. One of them is to show that they are incorporating the real Marvel
right.
universe. I mean, they just said, well, we need to show that we're doing it, and I think that was a good way to do it. And also, to kind of give a little backstory and more explanation on not only, or maybe open up that mystery, but also to show, okay, Deathlok is now a thing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think it's like it served purposes for the in the long run,
right.
I think, in that point of it. So, but especially knowing that we can now incorporate anything
right.
from Marvel Universe.
Well, and my thing about when it comes to a good, solid TV series, for me personally, for me to appreciate an episode, it has to be an episode where I couldn't skip it to understand what's going on in the storyline. And that was definitely an episode where I felt like I could have skipped it and I would have been fine.
But it's nice to know that, A, they can include other heroes, plus that's kind of the launching point of Deathlok.
Right.
It's nice to have that
yeah.
to go back to, maybe. So.
But another TV show I've been watching, have you seen Mind Games?
I haven't seen it. I've heard of it, but never watched it.
Very reminiscent of Lie to Me,
mm-hmm.
which you can actually get on Netflix. But if you're the type of person who likes to read body language or understand human behavior, sociology, then you will definitely appreciate Mind Games, because
mm-hmm.
basically what it is it's a group of people who basically make their income off of influencing other people to make decisions.
Mm-hmm.
So you get this team together, you go out into a public place, your client comes to you and they're like, well, we need this person to make this decision. So what can this person do to influence that, or what can this team do to influence that person to make that decision? And they don't even know that they're getting teamed up on, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a very interesting psychological show, very bland in the sense of there is no action. It's a drama, so
okay.
it's not, you know, the show that you watch for supernatural atmospheres or
right.
anything like that. But if you're the type of person who likes analyzing and breaking things down, then you'll have a really good appreciation for what Mind Games has to offer.
I might have to check an episode of that.
Yeah,
I know it's on demand.
It's only 3 episodes in, I believe.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, you've got plenty of room to check it out.
I'll check the first episode out. We'll see what happens.
I actually didn't like the pilot as much.
Oh, really? All right, I'll go for 2 episodes.
Okay, I was about to say, because, you know, when you watch a pilot on a TV series, you hope that it's going to give enough information about the series to know what to expect in all the episodes, but you also hope that it's compelling enough that you don't think it's like too much in one area,
right?
And I think that's what that pilot did.
Okay.
But it's a good series.
Cool. All right, I'm going to check that one out. I got a recommendation for you. I've watched a few episodes of it, and it is very intriguing. Very great writing. And if you ever listen, if you've been listening to the podcast lately, Sean, you'll hear Eric ranting about it every time. Hannibal.
Okay.
It's pretty gory, and I'm surprised they get by with it on TV.
Really?
It's gorier at times than Walking Dead an entire season.
Hmm.
And Lawrence Fishburne is in it. Not Samuel Jackson, by the way. It's Lawrence Fishburne. In case you didn't get in that. but anyway, it's a very well-written series. My only thing is, I watch one episode and my whole brain, I'm just sitting there going, holy cow. You know, it's like, I don't know if I can watch 2 episodes in a row. I don't
it's
know if
so
I can.
It's so overwhelming.
It is very overwhelming. And so, you might give it a try. Check
yeah,
it out sometime.
Check
Hannibal.
It out, sure. Is that on Hulu? Is it?
I don't know. I know that Eric was telling me that on Netflix you can get the
first
season of it.
Okay.
It's
check that out then.
He says it's pretty good. So, and thanks. I've watched a few episodes.
There we go. Thanks, Eric.
Yeah, you may have two people hooked. All right. Well, let's see here. That's about it for TV.
Well, no. One thing that you'll probably frown at me for is that I have not been following The Walking Dead at all.
I'm gonna hate you now forever. We're done. Well, you never did keep up on it in the first place.
I tried to. I just wasn't. I mean, I have to be the only person in the world who does not appreciate the series for what it is. But for what it's worth, I pretty much get a synopsis every single time I log on Facebook for everybody else.
True. Well, I'll tell you what. If you decide to pick it up and try it out again, you can skip the whole second season. Just skip that whole season.
I think
forget
I watched,
all about it.
I watched season two. I think I got through half of season three.
The only major parts you need to know in season two is that Dale dies.
Yeah. You just need to watch the last episode of season two and you're good, really. But this season they're on now, holy cow, they've gotten basically, we got the season finale coming up this Sunday, but everybody's all split up and it's like their own survival from their point of view. It's pretty cool storytelling on that aspect of it. So,
yeah, that's the only series I really haven't kept too much up with.
Okay, all right. Well, I had the hardest time getting you to keep up with Arrow at first when it first came out. Well, oh, that's right, because you didn't have a television at that time.
Yeah.
And then once I got you on it, then you... Nerd Up
Podcast. Yeah, Isaac and I are going to be at Winter Soldier this Thursday night at the Robinson Eagle Theater. So.
Yeah. I think me and my significant other are going to go to Evansville and watch it on IMAX.
Oh. Because
she works the weekend, so she works Friday, Saturday, Sunday, 5P to 5A. So we don't have movie weekends anymore.
Oh. Well, that's something I'd like to see that on IMAX. That would be...
Oh, me too.
I would like to see this one on IMAX. Actually, any of the Marvel movies, but...
We went and saw on our anniversary, I think, Pacific Rim and IMAX. And let me tell you, if my mind was not on the back of the seats behind me... Did you hear who they're trying to cast for the Daredevil show? Michael C. Hall from Dexter.
No way, really?
Oh!
It's rumored that they're talking to him right now, having him be Daredevil.
I can see that.
I'm against that.
One of my ads posted a thing, you know who I'd love to see play a Carnage in a Spider-Man movie? Michael C. Hall. I think he'd do a great job.
You know, you're right. From his Dexter days, he can play... I don't know. From Dexter, he was a subtle serial killer. I wonder if he could play the over-the-top serial killer.
I think he'd go over the top if he wants to.
Yeah, he probably could. Now, Tim, why are you against Michael C. Hall being Daredevil?
I don't know, man. He just seems like too much of a doughy white guy. You know what I mean?
That's kind of what Daredevil was, because he's blind.
Yeah.
No, I disagree respectfully with that. I don't think of someone who looks like a middle management type, which is what... he looks like to me. I just don't see that.
Well, he is the attorney.
True.
In Daredevil, when the Ben Affleck version, I think Ben Affleck pulled off Daredevil pretty well, but I don't think he pulled off Matt Murdock, the attorney, very well. I don't think he did that. That's the part that was missing from that movie for me. And so I'm thinking Dexter could could pull off the Matt Murdock. I don't know about the Daredevil aspect, though. Ah, wow, that's an interesting...
I'm thinking more Foggy Nelson than Daredevil.
yeah, you're right. Yeah, we'll have to see.
That's an interesting point with a lot of the superhero characters is that so often you've got an actor playing the character that they do the mild mannered so and so part pretty well, but then they don't really quite pull off the superhero part, or they do the superhero part well and not necessarily the standard average Joe component. It's rare that you have someone that does them both, because I may be speaking blasphemy here. But Christian Bale, incredibly good. Bruce Wayne, not so good a Batman. I'm sorry, I just don't. He just didn't. It didn't ring true. His that fakey voice that he puts on.
Yeah, I know.
I don't like it.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I mean, I like you said, Christian Bale pulled off Bruce Wayne for me really well. But the only thing that kept those movies alive for me. And it's just the second one, Heath Ledger as the Joker was just like the bomb.
Oh yeah,
you know. And if it weren't
absolutely,
if it weren't for him in that, I don't think I still haven't watched the third one, so I still don't know what happens with the Bane episode. So
have you ever noticed that during the Batman movies, all people ever care about is the enemies, and then all of a sudden, whenever someone that they don't like is playing the actor, oh, better make a big fit about it.
Yeah, true. Nobody ever said a word about you know, Danny DeVito playing the Penguin.
Well, yeah, that was back in the, what, early 90s, yeah, when he was in everything.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
They're like, ah, just Danny DeVito. He's in another movie.
Yeah, it's like...
One in 2 months.
Yeah,
I think
right.
I'm going to go with the gold standard as far as portraying the alter ego and the hero is going to be Chris Evans. I think his Steve Rogers and Captain America are both...
Oh. Yeah.
Absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah.
Well, see, the thing is, though, about those two, though, they're kind of the same person. There's no real difference between the Captain America and Steve Rogers because they're both time set. They're both new to this era.
The whole Steve Rogers before he became Captain America, though, Chris Evans pulled that off. I mean, sure, a lot of CGI as well, but he pulled that off. I believed he was that skinny, you know? He was a skinny.
Oh, me too.
He pulled that off. I mean, that, I think that's that right there made a lot of that difference for that movie. And that's what's going to make the difference this week and when I go watch it again.
See,
so.
A lot of people I know were turned off. They're like, oh, I don't want to see the new one because the first one was boring. I'm like, well, if you think about it, the first one was more of a time period thing, so it wasn't going to be as action-packed as you wanted it. As you're used to the most Marvel movies where it's, I don't know, I think it's going to do good.
Well,
I can't wait to see it.
Well, I think this one's going to be completely action-packed. At least from the trailers, it looks like it's going to be.
Yeah.
And
from what I've been reading is they say it's kind of like a spy thriller, kind of like a Mission Impossible kind of thing. And rumor, I don't know if this is a spoiler or not, I have read rumors that Black Widow may go bad.
In the comics, she went back and forth bad and good anyway, so...
Yeah, so that's what I think they're going to try and do in the movies, I think.
Wouldn't surprise me. Because, you know, she does have red in the ledger she needs to make up. So, yeah, we'll see how that... Yeah, but
nice
I'm,
little inside
I'm telling
reference
you,
there.
Yeah, I'm telling you, though, the best thing I'm looking forward to is Falcon. That's
yeah.
I don't know why. I never was a big reader of Captain America comics, but and I know he's not going to have that cool red and white outfit. But I'm just looking forward to Falcon. I think that's going to be a really cool hero.
I think they were talking about making him have his own standalone movie, but then people were against it. They just kind of released a thing saying we might do a standalone movie with him.
I don't think they could, really, because, I mean, he's too well associated with Captain America. I think you really can't do him without Captain America. So
I could see possibly one of those Marvel one-shots, those little shorts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's no way you're going to make it. You're never going to see a Falcon.
Yeah.
I just wanted to jump in and say, you know, we were talking about the alter egos of the superheroes and such. But, I mean, and I didn't read any of the Captain America comics. My knowledge of him comes completely from the Marvel movies. But he's not making any attempt to hide his true identity, is he? He appears without his mask a lot.
That,
you know, right there would explain why his characters are so similar, whereas Batman or Spider-Man, they're hiding their true identity, so they're deliberately putting on these false identities.
True.
As we were talking about earlier about you think actors that can do both roles pretty good, I honestly think Andrew Garfield does both roles pretty good.
Uh-oh, you hit one on Tim now.
I know, I'm assuming some people in this room probably don't like Andrew Garfield.
Tim does not like Andrew Garfield as Spider-Man.
I don't dislike him.
Oh, okay.
I just, these, I think he could be a perfectly passable Spider-Man. But right now, I mean, that movie was terrible. And
the first
new
one,
movie looks terrible.
Really? You think Spider-Man 2 is going to be bad?
Absolutely. I mean, what could possibly make a picture even more of a disaster? Just add more and more villains to it.
Same goes for Spider-Man 3 of the original.
There's never been a superhero film where you add more villains and it gets better.
I really agree with that, but I want them to give me all the villains they got now, because I want to see, mainly I want to see Venom, and that's Michael, there's your area, but I want to see Venom in a real chance at a movie, not the Spider-Man 3 version. But
they're talking about how he's going to get his own standalone film.
That could be interesting. I mean, they got in the trailer, they got the little teaser with the orb filled with the Venom symbiote thing. So I'm not sure I'm liking the way that Oscorp's going to create a Venom.
Well, because if this is what they're doing, I know I'm not insulting anyone in this room, but most of the comic books they're doing now in the Marvel is based in the Ultimate Universe.
Yeah.
The Ultimate Universe, they made the symbiote suit. The symbiote suit was supposed to be a cure for cancer. But Richard Parker and Edward Brock Sr. were working on together. So that's why it's like that. But I mean, it's honestly, I've read rumors that, well, not rumors, but read facts that they said the Rhino is only going to be the movie for like 5 minutes.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Oh.
And him and Spider-Man are going to fight, then he's just going to go away, so then it'll probably go down to just Electro and Green Goblin.
Hopefully Green Goblin won't turn good all of a sudden like in Spider-Man 3, but here you go. I got a question, and this one, Tim, I want you to put in on this one as well. Especially you, Tim. I'm curious about your opinion on this. What do you think of Paul Giamatti as the Rhino?
I don't mind Paul Giamatti, honestly. I don't think he's a terrible actor.
Well, no, I think he's an awesome actor. I like what he does. But the character of Rhino is supposed to be like this. I mean, you know, before he's the Rhino and the guy playing him,
big,
you know,
Russian,
he's dumb.
Yeah,
he's dumb as a box of rocks.
In the Ultimate Universe, it's this nerdy guy that's like 2 foot tall in a big giant cybernetic suit that he made.
Oh, Tim, what do you think of Paul Giamatti playing a Rhino? Playing the Rhino.
I think he's a fantastic actor, and I'm sure he'll bring something interesting to the role. But I stand by my assessment. I think he's going to be wasted. I mean, he's only going to be in the movie very little at the very beginning, from what I understand. And it's such a shame to throw such a talented actor into just a tiny amount of screen time.
Yeah.
And we're going to spend the entire film with Jamie Foxx. Oh, brother.
Now, but I got to say that Paul Giamatti was in 12 Years a Slave for all of about 5 minutes, and the man made an amazing impression. I mean, you remember his character for the rest of that film. I mean, it's not that he does anything terribly outlandish. It's just his character is just so well established from the first time he opens his mouth. That he just has that kind of ability to take a third or fourth tier character and make them stand out like not many other can.
I don't doubt it. I think he's definitely going to make an impression. I think that's only to the good for that film.
Yeah.
It needs all the help it can get.
No, tell us really what you think. But well, see, I think casting Paul Giamatti as the Rhino was like when they stuck Philip Seymour Hoffman in Mission Impossible. I'm like, God, what a waste. Then again, Philip Seymour Hoffman, most people remember his part in that Mission Impossible more than anything else. So
also, he's unavailable now, right?
Yeah. A little bit. Yeah.
Too soon? Okay. Good to know.
Also, from what we've seen in the trailers, Rhino doesn't really look like he's going to be talking as much as he usually did in like the comics because the giant mechanical suit.
Yeah.
It's probably hard to talk through a giant wall of metallic stuff in front of your face.
Tony Stark does it.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know, man. That Rhino suit just screams Michael Bay. I don't know, right?
I agree with you there. I honestly just think if they can pull it off right, I think the movie will be good. I agree with you. The first one wasn't the best, but it wasn't Spider-Man 3.
Right.
So
yeah, there you go, yeah.
But I really like Andrew Garfield. A lot of people I know where they're like, oh, he's too whiny. He's too angsty. I'm like, that's what Peter is. He has no parents. His uncle just died. I'm sorry he's a little pissed off at the world.
Yeah, and that's what I'm with you on that. I'm like that 100%. That's why I thought Andrew Garfield was pretty cool. I will say, Tobey Maguire, he did a pretty dang good job and totally surprised everybody that he could pull off Spider-Man. But I think Andrew Garfield really brought some more teen angst into it. That is actually in a lot of the earlier comics, and and whininess, and it's like, you know, I mean, after all, he started out, you know, trying to make some money on the deal first. Now, and I will say though, they did not need to retell his origin story. I can see why they did it, because now they're making it all everything tied into Oscorp. But
also, I just wanted to bring up one more thing: why these movies are better, because Spider-Man doesn't have natural webbing.
Yes, yes. I hated that.
Minor detail.
I hated that.
Unless it was if it was Spider-Man 2099, I would have been fine with it.
Go ahead.
I also heard a rumor that they said Andrew Garfield won't be in the fourth one. Because they're doing four Spider-Man movies. So they might try and pull a Miles Morales on people.
Oh, that would be cool. I wouldn't mind that a bit.
And the fourth one.
Yeah.
And they also said Mark Webb, the guy who's directing the second one and the third one, won't be directing the last one.
Mark Webb.
I know.
Yeah, I know.
Perfect, huh?
Let's talk about some movies. It's been a while, Sean. Have you seen anything decent worth watching?
I mean, the pretty expected movies, of course. I mean, I saw Lego Movie. You guys are already given that movie lots of praise. I loved it as well.
Oh, yeah.
I saw 300 for my birthday.
Great movie.
That was an amazing movie. Most recently I saw, you know, the other night I actually watched Legend of Hercules.
Well, wait, before we go into that, Brandon and I talked about 300. Mm-hmm. I want to get your take on 300 Rise of an Empire real quick. Did you see it in 2D or 3D?
2D.
Okay. Did you think they overdid it on the 3D effects?
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, because I could be completely wrong. I'm not a huge movie buff when it comes to these references. But did Frank Miller have any influence on that?
Yeah, it was based on his...
Yeah, so I mean, like, Xerxes. You kind of have to go into that movie expecting a lot of Frank Miller style, and that's what I felt like.
Well, every time the film would slow down in the scene, that was a... Most of those were actually scenes from the comic, from the graphic novel, I should say. So yeah, I can see that. And I guess, yeah, okay. Well, see, I got tired of the blood flinging at me or swords in my
face.
And
like I said, I feel like that is a Frank Miller thing.
Yeah, it is. Now that you mention that, I'd agree with it.
So, but overall, I like the movie. I like the style of it. I like the dynamic of it. Actually, whenever I watch the movie, because I don't watch movie trailers that often, I had no idea that it was actually a parallel to what was actually going on in the previous 300 movie.
Yeah.
So it took me a minute to realize actually what was happening. And then I was like, whoa, so this is going on. And I was making all these connections.
Yeah.
And I think that's what made the part of the movie so enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
because you had that first to refer it to.
Well, since you guys saw it and I didn't see it, I just want to know one thing. Was there any references to this as Sparta?
No, not really. They did mention the part where the guy said a Persian messenger had already been here. What'd he do? Well, he dispatched him.
And you see the spot.
Yeah, you see the hole in the ground.
Yeah, you see the hole in the ground where he gets pushed into it.
But so. And that's another thing about this. You know, that was in the original 300, you had that "this is Sparta" moment where everybody in the world kept repeating that. It became a meme. There weren't any moments like that in this one.
I think that, and that, a lot of that has to do with the culture between the different groups of people. You don't have the whole chance going on in that group, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
Different leader. I mean, a lot more passive when it comes to that sort of thing. Honestly, I felt like Ava Green is what made that movie so enticing, who is the bad girl.
Okay, yeah.
So, and maybe it's just because I have had a huge crush on her since Casino Royale, but...
Well, see, I thought Lena Headey from Terminator series and also Game of Thrones.
Mm-hmm.
I thought she took it for me, and not that I have a crush, but I think she's a very
powerful woman.
A very powerful woman, yeah. Because of mainly Terminator, I loved her.
And I like how she does the storytelling.
Yes.
So that was very well done. And the ending to that, I don't think they could have really done the ending any better than what they did it for.
But that, you're right, that whole ending was just beautifully, and not only written, but the way they filmed it.
I mean, you're not I think the key description really there is beautiful or poetic, because
poetic would be good.
You know, the entire scene, you just appreciate. You don't necessarily expect it, but I didn't. I want to say so much, but not really a spoiler. But everything from the horse.
Yes.
Let me just say the horse. That's. I was like,
yes.
Oh yeah.
You know, like, that was an amazing part for me.
No CGI was harmed in this film. But no, you're right. That was the most powerful scene. And again, it's hard to say anything without giving this one away. But yeah, it was so beautifully done, and it was really, and it was very comic booky. Mm-hmm. You know, you made it as if you're turning the pages on a comic book.
There's one other movie I want to talk about that I got surprised with. I forgot all about this coming out. Was the new X-Men movie coming out. Now, Isaac and I have a personal vendetta against the X-Men movies. And this one is supposed to be a time-traveling movie. And Isaac...
Because since it's time-traveling, it'll probably involve Cable.
Isaac, tell them what they should be doing with the movie.
Fixing Deadpool.
Yes. Going back and fixing what they did when they ruined Deadpool. So... Well, Isaac and I were talking about that time travel that is either going to be Cable, and I kept saying, well, or it could be Bishop, so I'm guessing Bishop it is. So we'll see. Yeah. We'll see what happens.
Or both. Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, or both, yeah.
I just don't like how they're like sending Wolverine back instead of Kitty.
People love him. He's the favorite. I mean, that's why he's the reason that they're making so much headway and why those pictures are making so much money. He even had a little cameo in First Class. So I think if it weren't for Wolverine, unfortunately, that's the reason why they keep going with the X-Men movies, because Wolverine has captured everybody's heart. So.
Yeah, and just all the comic books, too. He had like four different books out.
Yeah. He was pretty popular. See, that's the thing. I never collected X-Men comics, and I had so many friends. No, you got to read Wolverine. I'm like, no. And I'm glad I did.
Can I just say what my biggest problem is with the Wolverine character?
Let's hear it.
All right, you've got this guy who is completely kick-ass with these 12-inch razor blade claws, and he never uses them, at least not for dispatching bad guys, because it's all PG-rated stuff. You can't show, Wolverine disemboweling someone with his claws. So they're basically for show only, really. I mean, think about it.
Yeah, in the movies,
The fact that he is basically invincible is really his superpower, and those claws are just for show because he can never really use them. And this is my problem with any PG-rated movie where you've got sword play or blades going on. You never see anyone die with it, or if you do, it's like, it's obscured. You don't see the blade going in, and you certainly don't see it coming out their back.
Right. Right.
I would just rather not see any sword play at all in a PG-rated movie than to see it and see no one actually being killed with it. You know what I mean?
Well, hey, it's like the best use of the there are two best uses in all the X-Men movies of Wolverine's claws: flip off Cyclops, and that was like, oh yeah, cool, that's funny. And then the other one was to cut off one of the Statue of Liberty spiky things. It's like, that was it. Yeah, I mean, but they never really, it wasn't really the like Eric said, the real cutting gore type that should be happening. You're right, he doesn't use them, but. All right, let's move on to, actually.
Well, hold on, actually, before we get off of movies, I do want to bring up, that I want to do you all a favor.
Okay.
Do not, no matter what you hear or what your friends try to convince you, do not go see Sabotage. It is the worst movie I have seen in a very, very long time. I wanted so badly to like this movie. I mean, the trailer looked kick-ass. I was like, all right, now this is the Schwarzenegger film that I've been waiting for him to do since he, got back into making films again. And it is the worst. The script is just beyond stupid. Every character is beyond stupid. And I was like, okay, fine. First 10 minutes, 15 minutes, I discovered that, okay, I can't expect anything from this script, but maybe there'll be some cool action scenes. No, there wasn't even any cool action scenes that could redeem this turkey. So it is just so bad. There's nothing remotely worth seeing in this movie. Save your money.
Well, I'll tell you what, I saw that you were going to go see that yesterday, Eric. It was yesterday that you saw it, right? Yeah. And I saw that you're going to see that, and I'm like thinking, why? I mean, because there's only a couple Schwarzenegger movies that I really like, and T2 is one of them, and the other one was his Total Recall because of the laugh factor. I saw that, I was just like, why? And I'm like, I'm hoping it's a good one, but no, I'm glad it wasn't. Because
See, I am a big Schwarzenegger fan. I'm not saying that he's a great actor, certainly not saying he's a great actor, but when he is cast in the right role, there's no one that can do the roles that Schwarzenegger does. And there are a lot of Schwarzenegger films that I dearly love and are among my favorite films. I mean, the first Conan the Barbarian, the Terminator movies, especially T1 and T2. Commando is an awesome film. I mean, it's very much a B film, very much on a budget, but I love that movie so much. I never get tired of watching that movie. And the one-liners in that movie are probably some of the best / worst one-liners he's ever given in any film. And as a matter of fact, when people, what's the guy, McBain in Simpsons, when he says one of his really bad lines, they're usually a riff on something that from a line from Commando.
Oh, is that right?
I mean, if you haven't seen Commando recently, you should go back and watch it. Just don't be expecting a big blockbuster action film. It does have some great, great action scenes, and it's a lot bloodier than most of Schwarzenegger's films are. You see a guy's head get shaved off with Schwarzenegger throws a circular saw blade and takes off the top of a guy's head. That's pretty cool.
Or the pun, what was it? He throws a pipe and nails a guy and
stickled out.
Hey, you should let off some steam.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. You guys are starting You guys are starting to make this sound worth seeing.
Just for the laugh?
You're telling me that this movie is absolutely awful and full of bad puns? Dude, I am on my way to the theater right now.
No. This is the movie I'm talking about is actually Commando, not Sabotage. Sabotage has no bad puns. It has nothing worth saying. There's not even bad good. You know what I mean? But Commando has some really bad puns that are so bad that they're good.
That's a beautiful movie. This movie then.
Save your money. Don't go see Sabotage. Go rent Commando and watch it again. It's got a very young Alyssa Milano, and I've been saying Schwarzenegger's trying to bring his career back, and he's been failing pretty miserably so far. Although I got to say that I did like The Last Stand, but it's not the Schwarzenegger movie that I was looking for. But I've been saying if he really wants to get the fans back on board, make a sequel to one of these films, which he is. He's doing another Terminator film that sounds like it might actually be good. He's making a sequel to Conan, which I haven't heard anything about yet. But I was like, make a sequel to Commando. Go back, they can make it on the cheap because the first one was made on the cheap. Indulge in those really bad one-liners. Alyssa Milano, her career's in the toilet. She'll come back and do it because, what else is she doing? Yeah. And we might even get her to take off her top or something. She does that a lot now. Commando 2 is a movie that will make itself.
Yeah, that sounds beautiful. I'm all about it. Let's get this funded.
Oh, absolutely.
Start a Kickstarter.
I'll kickstart.
I think the thing about this, Schwarzenegger and Sylvester Stallone both are trying to stretch out their careers, by doing kind of the same type of movies that they're famous for doing. I think it's really time for them both to admit that that's just not where they're at anymore.
Right.
They are not these invincible, unstoppable machines that they once were in their prime. And, they did do some great movies in their prime. But, it's time to acknowledge the fact that we all age. It's something, I'm 45 years old. I'm starting to come to terms with that, too. But, it's a fact of life. We all age. It's time for them to start looking for other ways to contribute to entertainment. Whether it's maybe stepping into the director's chair or helping produce films by younger talent and giving their expertise into making these films, or maybe looking for a career resurgence by doing a smaller part in a Tarantino film. There are other ways that they can continue to do what they do well, but still acknowledge the fact that, hey, maybe it's time to pass the reins off to somebody else. I am not the least bit interested in seeing Schwarzenegger in another Terminator film. That boat has sailed.
Well, see, here's what I think. I think they should make a whole bunch more Expendables films using those guys as the main leaders and just recruit the new action heroes to actually do the – they'll sit behind the desk or something and the new action heroes go out and do the
– No, the Expendables movies could have been good, but they're so badly directed and edited that you can't make heads or tails out of any of the action scenes. They're just – it's a big mess. The first one, I haven't seen the second one because I was so disgusted by the first one, but I just remember the big action scene in the first one. It was at night, and you've got 100 different people running around, and the cuts were so quick, and the camera was so close up on all the action. I was like, can't tell who the bad guys are from the good guys here. Who's been killed? Who's doing the shooting? Yeah. It was a mess. And if you can't track the action, what is the point of an action movie?
Exactly.
Michael Bay?
What? Michael? Oh, anyway. Yeah, speaking of which, what do you guys think of the new Transformers movie coming out? You guys know you're anxious to go see that, right?
Jeez.
That or the new... Or are you talking about the new Ninja Turtles movie? Because they kind of look the same.
Yeah, I know, right? They do, too. Those terminating turtles.
With robots. We're talking about the wrong movie. We use chemicals and stuff on turtles.
Yeah. I'm hating this relaunch of the turtles. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, they... first of all, the whole Turtles idea is they're a side effect from creating Daredevil. They're not, someone didn't set out to make the Turtles. So they ruined it right there. But no, I think this Transformers movie, Age of Extinction, I think kids 6 to 12 may love it. You're not a Transformers. Well, the Turtles movie, I don't know. I saw that trailer and I'm like, that doesn't look right. So I don't know.
Yeah, and what I heard was Megan Fox was pregnant when she filmed this movie, so you're probably not going to see, you're going to see a lot of her upper half.
Well, then why put her in a movie?
I know.
Because she's such a brilliant actress.
I know, right? Oh.
The only thing that I saw in the trailer that I actually liked about the Ninja Turtles movie was Mikey at the end.
Oh, with a mask?
Yeah.
It's just a mask.
Yeah. Let's talk about some comic books a little bit. And books, but first I want to start out with a regular book. I started listening to the audiobook of William Shakespeare's The Empire Striketh Back. And let me tell you guys, I told you I was going to report on this. This thing is hilarious. Oh my gosh. You got, first of all, the people doing the voice work in this, they're doing a great job. Although, and Isaac will agree with me on this, the guy doing Harrison Ford's voice, the Han Solo voice, actually sounds more like Adam West.
Yeah.
But it's still entertaining. Okay, you know the whole scene where he cuts the tauntaun and him and Luke go, you know, they stay in there so that they don't freeze to death? And he,
yeah.
And of course, in the movie, it's like he cuts them and he goes, and it's like, you thought they smelled bad on the outside. Little joke there. Oh my gosh, he goes off into a Hamlet-like soliloquy about how bad these tauntauns smell on the inside. It is just hilarious. And
I think we need to pause right now and all think for a moment how fantastic the original Star Wars would have been with Adam West in it.
I know. Well, according to this audiobook, that he would have been awesome. I must save the princess. And the thing that's also good about this is that even R2-D2 has a voice. He's, you know, there, but it's, you know, it's always an aside and you hear what R2-D2 is actually thinking. Instead of just whistling and beeps and stuff. So you get to hear what he's thinking. And on top of that, the AT-AT walkers, they are actually, they have an aside. They have a thought process. They communicate with each other. So they're like they're living beings. But I'll tell you, it's just so hilarious. Yoda, it's got they do the voices really well. The C-3PO is the best sounding. He sounds so close to the character. Besides, was it Anthony McDaniel? Is that his name?
Anthony Daniels.
Okay, that's close. Anthony Daniels that played the voice of C-3PO actually had a bit of a, you know, kind of a, you'd expect that way he spoke in a Shakespearean play anyway. But now with the these and thous added in, it is even more so. But R2-D2, Yoda, the thing about Yoda that I like best is that all his lines, now the rest of it is like a William Shakespeare play. It's all iambic pentameter and the play, the words and everything are just like Shakespeare, but the Yoda part, he speaks in haiku. So you have, you know, the three lines. Every time he delivers something, it's always going to be three lines directly. Sometimes six because he has a lot to say, but it's all in haiku, and it's so cool once you know that to listen to that and it's like and listen to his delivery. But it's hilarious. It's one of the best mashups I've seen in a while. I mean, I cracked up at Pride, Prejudice, and Zombies, but this one. Oh, we've just had. I mean, Isaac got to hear a little bit of it. I think it's great. Knowing, you know, Tim, you and Eric and I, we studied not necessarily the same semester, but we all studied. Well, I'm pretty sure we did. Alex Christopoulos's Shakespeare class. Did you guys have that?
Krusty.
Did you have that, Tim?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and the stuff. I mean, that's right there. I learned more about Shakespeare during that class ever in my life because before I always thought he was boring, but he actually made it worth listening. I think Tim and I, you and I were in the same class.
I think that's possible.
Yeah.
And it's been a couple of years since then.
A little bit, yeah. I don't want to mention that 20 years gone by. But anyway, with that appreciation of Shakespeare behind me, listening to this is just, it's just phenomenal. You guys should pick it up. Tim Coker won here because he had the first book, A New Hope Verily or something, whatever, I forget what that is called. He could back me up on this.
We totally were in the same class because we did that audio project that you did. Don't you remember we did that Shakespeare rap project?
Oh my God, yes, that's right. Oh yes, I remember that.
Wow.
Yeah, that was something.
That was a thing, yeah. That was a thing that happened.
I don't think I have the tape of that anymore.
What a shame.
So Gil, in this audiobook, do they actually specifically say what the temperature is inside of a tauntaun? It's lukewarm.
It's like, yeah, blah blah blah.
Oh my God!
that whole scene right there was just hilarious in the book. And then I'm only like, he's just now training with Yoda. He just went into the cave and saw Darth Vader and cut off his head, and it turned out to be his own head. So that's where I'm at in the book, if you know the movie. But oh, you guys, do yourself a favor and pick up the audiobook version of these. They're so well performed and multicast voicing. So I wish I could remember the author's name that put this mashup together. It's not on the top of my head right now, but it's good. It's worth it. Check it out. All right, let's move on to comic books. Getting ready to read the latest Superior Spider-Man, where it looks like, well, Spider-Man 2099 is going to make an appearance because the cover has Superior Spider-Man and Spider-Man 2099 being held up by the Goblin, so by the throat. So we'll see what happens with this one. But this is turning out to be a good storyline with this Battle of the Goblins thing. Anybody else reading that?
Which issue is that? Because I've read 30.
Oh, this one's 29 that I'm on.
Okay, so I've read the most recent one.
Okay. How much of an appearance does 2099 Spider-Man make?
Towards the end of the issue.
Okay, because with him on the cover, I'm like, because he's one of my favorite Spider-Mans, 2099. But I saw him on the cover, I'm like, oh, this is going to be good. So.
It said the old Miguel O'Hara.
Yep.
And he's also, since you like him so much, I think Marvel listened to you. He's going to get his own standalone series in June.
Oh, is that right? Awesome.
Yep. I think June or May. Let me look it up.
Ah, nice. Because, Isaac, like you said, isn't that everyone's favorite? I mean, he's got a lot of people love the Spider-Man 2099.
Other than, you know, Ben Reilly, Scarlet Spider.
Oh, yeah, that's your favorite. Tim, you and I talked about this being, good storyline, good run. It just keeps getting better.
I'd like to recommend one other thing too. If you're not reading the Superior Foes of Spider-Man, you should be reading that.
I am reading that one too. Yeah, that one's actually kind of funny. It's funny from this point of view from the foes, and they're all a bunch of bumbling foes. It's really I thought it was pretty good, funny. It's a good comic relief for the Superior Spider-Man world.
Also, didn't you just recently read 99 Problems?
Yeah,
Spider-Man or whatever?
The Marvel Knights. I finished that one up too. Anybody else read that? The Marvel Knights Spider-Man 5-issue run?
Oh, no. Isn't that the one where he had to fight all the villains?
Yeah, he has to 99 Problems, and all of them basically are all... Actually, here's the way I look at it. 99 Problems and a plot wasn't one, because it was a cool storyline, cool artwork, but they really kind of went nowhere with it. But it was cool that he had to battle 99 villains. And it was cool because through 5 issues, he was basically somebody drugged him. So he spent these 5 issues, and it's the Peter Parker Spider-Man too, by the way. He spends this 5-run issue jumping from space to space. Like at one point he's on an airplane, then he's on a submarine, then he's on a casino. I mean, it's just weird. Arcade makes an appearance in it, the villain Arcade. And here's the part I don't get. Basically, at the end of it, they recruited all the villains to battle him, and most of them would do it for free because they just want the chance to kick his butt, and Kingpin is the one that put this all together, and Spider-Man ends up winning, of course, but they have Venom and Carnage teaming up to fight Spider-Man. The problem I have with that is Venom and Carnage do not get along, ever. And it's
not even when it's to kill Spider-Man.
Yeah, I don't think, not even to kill, they'd want to kill each other first or whatever, but...
Yeah, Spider-Man teamed up with Venom to kill Carnage before...
Yeah, and so it's like that was out, and then the whole thing, to wrap it all up, it just like, some guy that was, I forget his name now, is a character that's been in before, the Kingpin's son, something Fisk, anyway, he kind of... made it better so that Spider-Man could win, but they didn't really fully explain how. But it's and it basically is just they hired all these villains to beat him up while he was drugged. So it's like, really, like I said, 99 problems and a plot really wasn't one of them. Apparently they didn't need to plot. The artwork and seeing every one of the villains drawn in it was really cool. That was the cool part of it, if nothing else. But I think it was like a $4.99 cover price comic. So when you're done with that, you spent $20 and you got really depressed, so keep that in mind. Anybody else got any comics they want to talk about?
I just read the first trade paperback of Haunt.
A
story made by Todd McFarlane and Robert Kirkman.
Wow, so Todd McFarlane, the guy that created Venom, the coolest villain ever in Spider-Man world, right,
and
Tim?
And Spawn.
Yeah, he does a lot of the artwork, and then because Robert Kirkman wrote the story, so the guy who writes The Walking Dead wrote the story too.
Right. Well, what's the storyline behind Haunt?
Yeah, it's really hard to explain because I've only read the first 5 issues, so it really hasn't explained a lot. The basis is there's these two brothers one's a priest and one was like a mercenary slash assassin. And the mercenary slash assassin brother gets killed. There's some guy who's experimenting on people, trying to make people immortal. And the brother found a notebook that had all his work in it, and he gets killed somehow. It hasn't explained how he died. But then his ghost comes back and starts talking to his brother. And these guys bust into his house. Or he's staying at his wife's house because the dead brother says, "Hey, you should watch my wife. These men are coming after her. Gonna come after her." He goes to the wife's house to watch over, and then these guys bust in. The brother bonds. The ghost goes into the other brother's body, and his symbiotic suit, kind of like Venom, some sort, comes out of the brother's body, and then he becomes Spawn.
Oh.
And it looks like Spawn, but it's like white.
That sounds like that. Now with Todd McFarlane and Robert Kirkman teaming up, that should be pretty interesting. So I'm gonna.
The artwork's really good. The artwork is amazing.
Now,
like, it's really bloody, gory, you know, Spawn, like him ripping people's heads off.
Right.
And stuff.
Now, is that an ongoing series?
Yes.
Okay. Cool. I'm going to check that one out. I got.
Yeah, I got the first trade paperback when I was in Indian. Actually, no, I ordered it. But, yeah, I think it also ties in with Spawn a little bit. I don't know if it does. It came out back in 2009.
Okay. Yeah, I dropped the whole Image Comics run. I used to be a big fan of Image Comics in general, especially Spawn, but then they kind of lost me, and I dropped them and just went with Spider-Man only. So, and that was back in 2003.
It's Haunt Volume 1, Issues 1 through 5, April 2010. Haunt Volume 2, 6 through 12, February 2011. Haunt 13 through 18 came out June 2012. Haunt 19 through 25 came out in October. And Haunt in Volume 5, 26 through 30, came out in January. And then I just read the Moon Knight Bendis run, and I thought it was terrible. It's the old one. I think it was back 2006. It was seven issues. I have the trade paperback.
Actually, I'm thinking they've kind of tried to relaunch them here recently, and I was thinking about that. I was thinking that was the one you're talking about.
That's a good one. I have issue one of that. That's a really... I liked it. I actually added it to my pull list out there at Vision. And also, has anyone here read the new Ghost Rider?
No, I've got that. I've got it ready to read. I want to read that. Now they got a whole new different writer, basically, whole new character. And this one, he almost looks like I want to say almost robotic looking. Some of the graphics I saw. I just picked up a new. Actually, thanks to Tim Mattson recommending it last week on the podcast. $6 Million Man, season 6. Tim, thanks for recommending that.
Now, no problem.
One more thing. I looked through it real quick, and I'm really liking the way it looks. I think I'm going to enjoy this one. You're going to have another list for me to read now. So, but yeah, I've got that one, $6 Million Man series or season 6. Again, yeah. When you first brought it up, I'm like, well, no, Kevin Smith already did that with Bionic Man, and then. Now, realizing it's just, you know, takes place where the TV series left off, that ought to be a really good one. Podcast.
Yeah, you had a book.
Yep. A book I've been reading is called Mastermind, How to Think Like Sherlock Holmes.
No.
It's by Maria Konnikova. Mm-hmm. And I like to read a lot of books that are nonfiction based, mm-hmm. that just kind of help your daily routines. Mm-hmm. And when I saw the cover of this, you know, it intrigued me because... Sherlock Holmes is such an ingenious thinker, the way he breaks things down. You know, whether you've read the movie whether you've seen the movie or read the book, you kind of know what I'm talking about. He has a tendency to visually break things down on how things are going to happen before they happen.
Or, right.
If you blindfold him, he can tell you where you are just because he knows everything.
Right.
And Masterminds is just a book about programming your brain to put a lot more thought into every single action of your life. And, you know, one example that it has is that, you know, how impressionable are you when it comes to someone that you don't know coming up to you? What creates your opinion of them?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if... a person who's dressed in raggedy clothes, they have dirt all over their face, comes up to you, you kind of make an immediate impression on them based on their opinion. So the question becomes, you know, what kind of weight do you put into the influence of your opinion? Do you put more weight into appearance, or do you put more weight into
how they speak. Mm-hmm. And the book just kind of teaches you to start analyzing things in a different way. And whenever you're basing your opinions or your thoughts or your decisions, how are you getting to that decision? And what are you, what weight are you putting into different categories to make that decision or assumption? So it just kind of reprograms your brain. Just you want to turn that second thought.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want it to be a thing where you step back and rethink things. You want that second thought to be your first thought.
Hmm. Okay.
So, you know, one thing I've been doing on a daily basis is I count how many steps it takes me to get to a certain point,
mm-hmm.
especially if it's a spot that I do daily, because then I'll know that for whatever reason, if I ever get kidnapped and they take me to the same spot, I'll know how many steps it took to get there. I'll know where I'm at. And it's just a good practice, whether it's in that exact spot or not, but just to program your brain to think on that level, it's just been a really healthy thing overall, and it's been very enlightening for me.
I can see you just thinking you're getting kidnapped and sitting there,
yeah.
1, 2, 3, and they're like, what are you doing?
Exactly. I mean, that was the entire purpose of me buying the book, so I would know what to do if I was ever kidnapped and put a blindfold on.
Or thrown in the trunk of a car. Well, Isaac, there goes our plans for the night. Can't do that now. So, oh, man.
Foiled again.
Actually, that sounds very intriguing. I like the idea. Well, you did a similar book, but more along the lines of, well, I guess it was that, but Becoming Batman.
Yeah.
Just think, you're going to become Batman and Sherlock Holmes all wrapped up into one.
That's true.
You Curse are becoming
you,
a hero.
He-Man.
You are becoming a superhero.
Tim, you and I, in our rehearsal earlier, talked about this. What do you guys all think of Oculus Rift being bought by Facebook?
I think it's a little disappointing. What I really was most interested in was the possibility of really cool immersive games coming for this type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're all nerds, so we all live to have the holodeck invented in our lifetimes, of course.
Well,
but
yeah.
in the meantime, we'll have this virtual reality to play with. My biggest fear is that Facebook uses it exactly how you fear they will, to serve you ads, mm-hmm. and really not much else.
Social media gone virtual reality. I mean, that's the thing of dystopian futures you see in all these bad sci-fi movies. And like you said, overrun with ads. It's like, your friends like this. You should like it too. It's like, get off my screen. I'm playing a game or whatever the case.
It is the dystopian future. The pop-ups are actually pop-ups.
Oh, and they'll really pop up and slap you in the head.
That would be weird. Like, you're trying to play an Oculus Rift game. It's owned by Facebook, and it's advertisement plays. You try and close your eyes, and then the Oculus Rift reads that your eyes aren't open, so then you have to open your eyes and actually watch the ad.
You know, you're right. That
skip
yeah.
ad. No skip button.
I can see that happening.
You can't download a pop-up blocker either.
Well, I think Facebook buying it out, you know, it's going to be social media and the whole fun gaming stuff's going to get lost. I mean, can you imagine sitting there with this Oculus Rift device on your head and you're just, you know, looking around, surfing your social media, looking at everybody. Oh, I like that picture. Oh, I like that comment you just made. And then, of course, there's always going to be the bad grammar and all the other stuff. It's just not going to be right.
I think maybe our fears are a little bit unfounded. I'm sure. I mean, there are plenty of people who have a lot of business smarts that work for Facebook, and I'm sure they're not turning a deaf ear to all of this uproar. They're well aware of what people really want out of this device.
I think they're more concerned with how much money they can make off of it than
right.
what people want, honestly.
Well, that is true, yeah, but if no one wants the product that they're bringing to market, then you know, they're well aware that that is not going to make them money.
Yeah, they're in it to make the money. After all, that's what anything out there in the world anymore is. They're wanting making money off something.
It's been a long time since Facebook was a cutting edge thing. You know, most people are, you know, anymore abandoning it in droves. The younger audience is not taking to it like the older audience has. Let's face it, your mom isn't going to be the one that's going to be interested in the Oculus Rift.
Right, right.
You know, and they're going to have to open that platform up to third-party developers, hopefully, to bring some cool games to it.
But here's what I know that happened with Facebook. When Facebook came on the market, came around, you didn't have all of these ads. It was a social platform. That's all it was. Mm-hmm. And once they had, you know, a billion people subscribed, that's when they started squeezing people and started throwing in ads wherever they could fit them and invading our privacy and without telling us. And I mean, just doing all these really unscrupulous things, and all in the name of pursuing the almighty dollar. That's exactly what they're going to do with the Oculus Rift. They're going to give it to us first with no strings attached. It's going to be really cool. They're going to give us a bunch of cool applications. And once they have the market, that's when they're going to start introducing all the pop-up ads and start throwing in all the things that we don't like, because they already have us, because we've already invested in their product and we're already invested in the time. And most of us are not going to just give up or throw it out the door because of a few ads. That's the way they work, because they're that insidious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that assessment. I think probably the closest analog that you can find that's current is Google and YouTube. You know, when Google bought YouTube, it was kind of a little bit of a Wild West kind of scenario. It was pretty free. You know, there was not a lot of restriction on the content. You know, people could post whatever they want to. And like Eric said, they eventually, after they got everybody hooked in, you know, then they started looking to monetize that, clamp down on it, and put a lot more restrictions in place. I mark my words that I agree with Eric. I think that's exactly the way that Oculus Rift is going to turn out.
Just like the crack dealer in the corner will give you a discount or maybe even the first couple of rocks for free, because he knows once you're addicted, you're going to keep coming back.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, look at the Xbox and anymore, really, they're games, but they have ads. They have ads on there, especially if you go in the communities. They're not as prominent as Facebook ads are, but there are ads there that... In fact,
that interface for the Xbox One is terrible. It really is. The Xbox 360 and the Xbox One, they're all about serving ads to you.
Yeah.
You basically have to dig to find the content you really want.
Yeah.
And I think really the real winner out of this is going to be Sony and Microsoft, because both of them have a VR initiative going on. Sony's a little bit further out of the gate with this thing called Project Morpheus. That looks very similar to what the Oculus Rift was. And I think if you're going to look for a dedicated gaming device, probably the Sony VR headset is going to be the one to buy.
Well, I know that when I do actually put down the money to buy a console, which probably won't happen for another year, it's going to be a Sony. It's going to be a PlayStation 4. I've already heard way too many bad things about the Xbox One, the fact that most of its games don't even run at a full 60 frames per second, and there's just a lot of things I've been hearing that I don't like about the new Xbox.
Well, I think the biggest difference is going to be just from the get-go, Sony said, it's all about the games. Yes, it'll do other things, but we are focused primarily on games. And Microsoft, out of the gate, was like, it's all about TV.
Yeah.
Microsoft wants to be all things to all people, and that's the thing is they're going to be a jack of all trades and a master of none, and they're taking a hit already on their games because they wanted to be this and they wanted to be that, and you can't do it all in one system unless you're just going to build a computer. The PlayStation platform is a dedicated gaming platform that can do a few other things, but it is first and foremost a gaming platform.
And then you got Wii U out there that's not really doing much, but it's a lot of fun to play.
Oh, poor little Wii U.
That's what we have, and I'll tell you what, it's a fun platform to play on. What do you call that, Isaac? The little part that you can take and play separate.
What, you mean the actual controller?
Yeah. The
tablet?
It's like a tablet. You can take that, and like when Isaac and I play two-player games on there, I'm playing on the tablet, and I'm looking at that screen, and he's playing on the TV, and when we meet up together, we can do a split screen if we want, but it's more fun to have two different screens that you're playing on. But
it's like an LAN.
Yeah, and so I think that incorporation has really worked out well. Podcast.
One final segment that we always try to cover, and I know Isaac's eager to talk a little bit about something, but video games and games in general. I will tell you ahead of time that in the future on the podcast, you're going to be helping me test out games, because I got a couple of game companies that are going to send me playable demos, and one of them coming up is a land-building dice game.
Minecraft.
You play it with dice, and you collect cards, collect land, and collect properties, and build, like, you can build marshes, you can build bakeries, you can build
like Monopoly and Mousetrap combined.
Yeah, not really. It's even more intriguing. But they're going to be sending me a demo copy. We'll be trying that out.
That's exciting.
And other games, too. That's the first one to come out. Some RPGs, which we're going to have to get a few people involved in those. So we'll play some games. So we'll be getting more into some of the non-video games aspect.
And sure.
With your bringing the shop back into town, or a shop into
absolutely.
Town. WizBlizz Academy, by the way. WizBlizzAcademy.com.
Sponsor.
And you can check them out. But with that coming back, we're going to be talking more about non-video games. But before we let Isaac talk about his video game, do you play any games you want to talk about later?
Not recently. I mean, the only thing I'd like to mention is this game called Vibe Schwartz.
Mm-hmm.
It's another card game. And I think a lot of people will appreciate it. Basically, what it is it's a similar game to, like, let's say Magic, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
If you know how to play Magic, it's an easy game to kind of adapt to or transition into. But basically, you build your deck based on a certain anime, and your opponent builds a deck based on a certain anime, and those two decks duel.
No, neat.
So it's a... They bring in all sorts of animes.
Dragon Ball Z, Attack on Titan.
They have not. I doubt they bring Dragon Ball Z. I could see them bringing in Attack on Titan.
Dragon Ball Z is like the most well-known anime out there, other than like Pokemon or something like that.
Yeah, but I mean, first off, Dragon Ball Z has its own card game already. It just kind of died out.
Yeah, it did, didn't it? That's right.
Secondly, I think they're trying to, and not that Dragon Ball Z isn't a real anime, but I think they're really trying to keep it to the animes that are primarily like Japan oriented. They have a very consistent theme as far as the style of animes are concerned, but there are some really good ones. They've got Sword Art Online, they've got Project DNA, which are a lot of animes that if you're not already an anime otaku, so to speak,
uh-huh.
then you probably won't be familiar with the animes firsthand, but they're definitely a good way to get familiar with those animes.
Mm-hmm. That could be kind of a cool deal, because then it's a way to bring that type of world into
exactly. I mean, there's
play.
So many anime fans in this community to begin with.
Yeah.
I think it's a really good opportunity for us to introduce that to them, but it is a relatively complex game to play. It took me 2 hours to actually pick up on and, you know, learn it.
Yeah,
fluently.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. Interesting. We'll keep an eye out for that. All right, Isaac, I know, wants to talk about some game called Deadpool. You finally, after all these months, beat it completely.
Oh, Deadpool.
They'll be singing the theme song. You know, this language is not allowed on this podcast. Yeah, the theme song is pretty interesting.
The
anyway,
game is interesting.
So, you said the final boss was the toughest one.
The enemies before the final boss were so much tougher.
Oh, so then you get to the final boss.
The final boss was just Mr. Sinister, or Sinister, whatever you want to say. Except he's, like, in four clones. But it's basically just your usual enemy, only with a strong magic attack that he can use to, like, throw you away with psychokinesis.
Hmm.
But other than that, he doesn't really have anything special about him, because I'm so used to taking on, like, hordes and hordes of enemies just with sledgehammers, so I mean...
Now, what was it that made this one of the... Besides it being a Deadpool, and what was it made this game stick out for you?
Oh, the humor.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of being Deadpool, and I think that's one thing... Well, like you said on the last podcast, is that this was a video game about Deadpool trying to create his own video game.
Did I say that on the last podcast?
Yeah. Yeah, when we talked about Nolan North doing the voice work.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, it's like that's exactly, and you have these little side adventures. I've had a blast watching you play it. I wish I'd have seen you beat it, but
it's pretty much Deadpool summed up in one game, because you've got the fourth wall aspect of him just trying to make his own game as a storyline.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the classic Mexican food and the guns and all the explody gibbs. Giblets. And then you've just got, like, I don't know where else to go with this. The weapons
and humor, and that's what makes Deadpool, and that's what makes it. Actually, when they created the game, it was a fan, pretty much fans demanded this game, and I think that's one of the things that they had to work into. It was like, how are we going to do a this game because we know the people are going to buy it, and they did. And so they did it, him making a game. And so it turns out pretty good.
Best part about the probably the most fan-related thing is that there was actually a fan that won a contest. And he, so whenever you're in the game, like, you can call, you can use the phone in Deadpool's shabby apartment. And, like, he'll call for pizza. And, but later in the game, like, the guy that's supposed to be the player model, or the NPC model for the pizza delivery guy, actually his head is on a villain. And he's like, and Deadpool's like, oh god, it's the guy who was supposed to be the pizza delivery man in the first part of the game.
Oh, nice.
And then as you're fighting him, you can just hear in the background, we've got pepperoni, anchovies.
Yeah, it's a very bizarre game, but lots of fun to play. I mean, at least fun for me to watch you play. So, well, I'll tell you what, that's going to wrap up this segment of the podcast.
Deadpool.
I don't think that was necessary. Anyway.
That was totally necessary.
All right, so that either ends this segment or it ends the podcast. Either way, I'm Guilty Wilson.
I'm Isaac Wilson.
And I'm Sean Mitchell.
All right, guys, I'll tell you what. I know it's fun and dandy and all that good stuff, but we got Walking Dead to watch in a couple hours, and I've got to get some stuff done before I do that. So we're going to bring it into this podcast. First of all, welcome to the podcast, Michael. We might get you on here a few other times, see what happens. Thanks for joining us today, for sure, and good luck with the page. Now, once again, the page is it's a Facebook page. Is it just Venom?
Yeah, you just type in your URL, www.facebook.com/Venom with a capital V, the with a capital T, and then awesome with an A.
Okay.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, that works. It works. But yeah, check it out. That's a pretty good site. And the two guys who have made this podcast even more and more fun each week, Eric and Tim, you guys have what kept me keep me actually wanting to do it every week now, because I never know what we're going to talk about. So thanks, Tim, for joining us this week, and thanks for keeping the podcast going.
No problem.
And Eric, same to you, man. You're the one who helped me turn this thing around into something that's actually more fun to listen to. At least that's the remarks I get anymore.
My pleasure.
Before it was just one person's opinion. Now we got several, and we don't always disagree, and that's a good thing. So, and Isaac, of course, thanks for organizing this whole thing. Isaac is the guy that runs the Skype connections for us. He also is he sometimes looks up the information when we talk about it.
And I'm also the guy who puts the laughter in slaughter.
And he's also the guy that I have to put up with every freaking day of my life. Anyway, so thanks everybody. That's it for the podcast. I'm Guilty Wilson.
All right, Eric Billingsley.
Yeah, Michael Daugherty here.
Tim Mattson signing off.
All right,
good
I guess
night, Cleveland.
All right, I guess that's it for the podcast. Once again, stay nerdy.
www.gilwilson.com.
If you need quality voice work for your radio commercials, audio for TV commercials, or maybe just for that message on hold for your business, you need to check out
www.gilwilson.com.
GILWILSON.com. www.gilwilson.com. Check it out. It's quirky. It's fun. It's innovative.